Every true football fan knows that the NFL season truly begins after the Super Bowl champion has been crowned, and the Ringer NFL feed will keep you on top of all the news still happening around the league and heading into the 2024-25 season. I'm Sheil Kapadia, and every Monday and Friday, Ben Solak and I deliver sharp takes and debates on the draft, free agency, training camp, and beyond on Extra Point Taker.
And every Wednesday, we'll have Dual Threat, where Stephen Ruiz and yours truly, Nora Princiati, dive deep into all of the big offseason developments, with Ringer favorites Austin Gale and Lindsey Jones stopping by occasionally to share their expert football analysis.
Subscribe to the Ringer NFL Show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
And don't forget to follow the Ringer NFL on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and X at Ringer NFL.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we are boots on the ground in Phoenix at the Final Four. We are in the building. We are watching these games, and we are in our Airbnb reacting to what we saw in person. Myself, Kyle Mann, and we got Kyle Crichton on the ones and twos making things happen. Kyle, anything else before we get into today's episode? We got a lot to talk about.
I just want to tell you, I'm a goddamn chameleon. There was four media credentials for the Ringer. There was two seats, and
yeah,
you know, Kevin, deep, you know, Daddy Warbucks bought his tickets.
Kevin can figure it out.
I didn't. And I was sitting in the Christian basketball news outlet.
Right.
I was sitting in NCAA outlets. I was
TuscaloosaNews.com.
Whatever. Anytime somebody looked at me, I would get up and move.
You had a Harley Davidson shirt on.
I was moving. I was shaking. I never got caught. But first,
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Saturday night. We are in Phoenix, boots on the ground, and I am joined by Kyle Mann. Kyle Mann, great to see you in real life, in person.
In person. I figured we'd be sipping tropical drinks and it'd be like Hawaiian shirts and warm, but it's breezy out here.
It's a little chilly.
Yeah, it was a little breezy for the three-point shooting for some teams, others not so much.
Yeah.
But you said the feeling's right. I mean, you're damn right, Tate. I mean, it felt great. It just felt great to see everybody. It's like a holiday, the Final Four.
It is. And there's been a lot of talk around, you know, the basketball circles about, you know, the Final Four, especially on the men's side. Shaq says he doesn't even watch the bums on the men's game. Meanwhile, you're in the building. They cut to Shaq watching the game in the building. So, like, there's a lot of narrative-driven conversation. But once you're here at the Final Four in Phoenix, which is a great Final Four site, you see so many fans and you see so many people that are invested. We saw a Kansas State lady in a full Kansas State outfit. We saw a random Duke shirt, Kentucky, Carolina.
It's like Comic-Con thing.
Yeah, right. It's like you come to this convention of basketball minds that love college basketball, and people just say, I'm going to put that S on my chest and let you know what I feel. And it's a beautiful thing, and I love to see it.
Well, you were giving some grief to some people who we won't say which fan base,
okay,
that was buying, you know, a Final Four shirt and they had lost. And
okay,
I was like, I reminded you, Tate. I was like, you know, you wore a Final Four shirt that was from 1997. I was like, let them eat the
Arizona shirt.
I know.
It's okay.
But I give them credit for showing their faces. These people, Really what it is it's an expression of faith. And I think that we should reward them for that. They bought those tickets. I'm assuming they did.
Yeah.
Or they're just so diehard that they came anyway. Anyway, we can talk about tonight's game. It was a lot of sights and sounds, a lot of enthusiasm.
A lot of good stuff for the basketball world. And we got facts and figures. We got sights and sounds. We got stuff to talk about. Generally speaking, though, I think a lot of people, when they talk about the Final Four, they want to hear they want a percentage, like fan base wise, of what we've seen. I think Purdue fans have won, right? I mean, we are mobbed by Purdue fans. So they're everywhere. And it's their first time being in the Final Four since 1980. And like, they're living up to that moment. And everywhere you walk, you see some sort of Boiler shirt.
Did you hear in the bar area where while we were waiting to be picked up, did you hear those older guys talking? They were like, they were definitely I don't know if they were younger, boomer. I don't know what generation they were, but it was a guy who looked like he was probably in his 50s, I'd say. And they're
Kyle's giving us nods.
They're toasting just a knockdown age estimator, Kyle is. People don't realize that. So, but anyway, they're sitting there talking and, you know, toasting in the bar area of this hotel. And I overheard, and just the sort of, I don't know, just the affection and like the sentimentality in his voice. He was like,
it was camaraderie at its finest.
He was like, never thought I'd see the day, man. And right. they all were like dripping out of his voice. I was like, these dudes are having like a real moment over here.
They're like, we're playing Monday night. When do we think we'd be saying that? Yeah. You know what I mean? And it was great to see. We're going to talk about both those games. And let's start with the first game. We got some good theatrical stuff. We get to the arena. You know, all the big J's are there. So we're seeing people, Capital. Familiar faces, right? Everywhere.
Caps Lock was on today.
It was everywhere. But the good news is that we also saw the voice of the Final Four, friend of the program, Ian Eagle. We saw him walking in with his bag. That's like a trope of all these announcers. They walk in with their little carry-on, roll-on bag behind him. Ian Eagle, we got the tunnel walk with him. And it was a powerful walk. And I was like, that man looks like he's ready to call the Final Four.
Yeah, this is his moment. He's been waiting. He's been kind of called up. I don't think it's going to be like a Conan situation where Jim Nance comes.
Jim Nance in the crowd, by the way.
Actually, dude, I don't know. That would be really funny.
Nance says, I'm coming back.
Nance is like, I want to come back.
He's like, now that Houston is not going to win, I have decided I will be back.
Yeah, Nance comes on the Jumbotron. Hello, friends.
Right.
Yeah, even Ian Eagle didn't know. But yeah, Ian Eagle thought you had a heart monitor on.
We ran into Ian Eagle. He was very nice. We had the microphones, your live mics on. We were doing a little walk and talk around the arena. And Ian Eagle was like, are you okay? Are you nervous about the games tonight? And I just told him, it's just a microphone, Ian. Yeah. And we had a nice little rapport. He also stopped mid-conversation with a random lady. So I would like to apologize to her.
He used you as a ditch mechanism.
Yes,
you were his out. Like,
and he foisted this lady on someone else and was like, now I have a little
fun. We'll have to analyze the tape and figure out who it was, because I caught video of it a little bit.
Yeah, you had the video.
Yeah, so we'll
you
have to
panned
go
right at the time when Ian Eagle realized it was me.
He Heisman'd that lady.
It was a Dave Chappelle. He just pushes her out of the way. It was good. But shout out to Ian Eagle, first Final Four. That was one of the first sights and sounds that we love to see. Also, the State fans, the one big win of the night for NC State was the national anthem. They took over the national anthem. And I looked at you and I said, I think there might be more State fans in the building. Turns out there were more Purdue fans. But in that moment, they say red and red, white, and blue.
I didn't know they did that.
Oh, and you were, and I said to you, I was like, this is ACC basketball.
It was culture shock a little bit.
Yes.
For me, and I think for everybody in the arena. When they did that, everybody like did the Roman Polanski look. That's a weird reference. But yeah, they looked over and it was... It definitely more Purdue fans. I heard more Boiler Up than I think I've ever heard. They like flooded the plane I was on coming out to Phoenix, granted the geography thing, but they were loud, man. And Purdue gave them plenty of reasons to be loud. But NC State, they were feisty. You were a little worried that there was going to be some trouble. We heard some shit talking when we were coming into the arena that sounded a little friendly, but kind of like, I'll slit your throat was kind of the subtext.
Right. Because NC State fans, like, it's not a game. You know what I mean? And shout out to them. Like, this is their life. This is their lifeblood. And they're back on this stage. And like Purdue fans, they had this kind of like sentiment of joy, like you were talking about before, the catharsis of the moment. But NC State fans were coming out. They were talking harsh and they were letting them know. And unfortunately for NC State, that was about all they had, because from there it was all Purdue. And it really started from the jump. Kaufman Wrenn scores on the block early. Edie was guarded by DJ Burns. DJ Burns has never sweat this much in his life. Can we just start there? That was the matchup. The bigs versus the bigs.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle had a pretty good description of what it looked like when Burns was guarding Edie. I don't know if he's prepared to do that right now.
Do you have a mic?
Yeah, I just said he looked like he was hitting the sled drill. Like he was like fully extended. He was like trying to find a good
Everybody
angle.
Wants DJ Burns to play football, even when he's in the middle of a basketball game.
So we got
game.
Some tape on that. Yeah, we got some tape for when Burns does try to make that decision. We wondered if Burns would guard Edie straight up. Like I wasn't sure if that was going to be a thing that happened, but he did, and he did a pretty good job not fouling early. But I mean, one of the big takeaways from this game, we kind of got the idea that we didn't see as much Burns attacking Edie as I thought we might see, right?
Yeah, it was one of those things where I wish that DJ Burns got more touches. He ends up taking 10 shots in this game. He actually fared pretty well one-on-one with Edie. Had some nice post moves. Obviously, has a lot of touch and has been playing some great basketball. But this felt like DJ Horn looked in the mirror tonight and said, I guess I'm going to have to go win this game.
Horn porn. That's what this game was. Yeah.
And I don't know if that was a strategy of Matt Painter. You know, maybe in the post game, he talked about this a little bit, but it seemed like they were very content with DJ Horn taking 20 plus shots. He ended up taking 21 in the game, but there was a lot of shots where he just felt like he saw a sliver of a shot and was like, now I'm taking my moment. And it took away some of the connective tissue of what we've seen with NC State. And I do think Michael O'Connell getting hurt in this game was a big moment.
Yeah, I think so, because if you have a guard tandem, what you can kind of see happen sometimes is if one of them, like the ball moves through them and one of them they tilt towards wanting to score the ball, having it in their hands can be a tough, the forbidden fruit. You're dangling in front of them and they're like, well, you know, I love to score. And it's really hard to rewire that wiring if that's how you are. You have to really, really force yourself to do it. And when they have the ball in their hands, they're just thinking, well, this thing that I love to do, I have the option to do it. I can I'm cutting the middleman out here. And Horn, you know, we were talking about his percentages, you know, on the season. Horn from the mid range, I guess people who watch the game will be specific here, but he took a lot of like turning the corner, like pick and roll, dribble pull-ups in the mid-range. And we talked about that on the previous episode about like Purdue does that. They get behind you and push you. It's almost like they're pushing you into like a trap and like a haunted house.
Yeah, into
like
the Edie zone.
Like the bone ripper or whatever it is where you're
you
just
turn
like,
back and you're like, I want to get out of here.
Yeah, you're kind
of
like on a slide, like just flailing like, no. Yeah,
no, they, not they now.
It almost is like the paint tilts a little bit when you get to that part of the floor. And DJ had like, I'm not trying to like just praise DJ and not criticize him at all because he did have issues, but like Horn got in the mid range on those shots and just was taking these like dribble pull up jumpers over and over again, which on the season he shoots like almost 48% from that right elbow and 42% from the left. He's pretty good in the mid range. That's like where he likes to play. But over and over again, you know, it's a different thing to look at a stat like that and be like, okay, on the season he does that. Zach Edey represents nothing that is on the season. Zach Edey represents nothing. I mean, what have we seen that's been similar to it in college basketball, like in terms of rim protectors, like right lately?
I mean, seriously, it's like on a different level. It's like the guy, the wavy hands, you know, at the car dealership. I mean, that's Zach Edey, and he really doesn't have to do but so much. And I was talking to you before the game. Painter said if he can keep his feet planted and he doesn't jump, and then he can test shots, we feel good about where we stand. And that's really what he kind of did in this game. And there were some moments where DJ Burns put some pressure on him. But on the other side, not just his defensive rim protection, his rim pressure on the offensive end. I mean, him rolling to the basket, getting low, deep post position was really the detriment to everything NC State wanted to do.
You couldn't do everything that you wanted to do because they just repeatedly ran that Spain pick and roll, which is just screen the screener for it, like for people who aren't following all the time and closely. It's just like you have the normal pick and roll, you just add a third person who back screens the guy, and then that person often will pop out and they'll put a shooter in that action. So
Mason,
like
Gillis, Fletcher Lawyer, right?
So you'll get out there, and there were even like a few different times where NC State covered that part well, but then like the subplot of that, and it's hardly a subplot, is Purdue will run that action, and Edie, while you've addressed the shooter, you're scrambling, and you're usually on the high side of Edie, which is not where you want to be, because Edie, unlike Klingon, it has a little more craft around the basket. We can talk about UConn, but like, he just gets that low position, dude, and you're just kind of screwed if he does that.
And that low position, one of the things that you used to always try to do with Edie was like make him go over his right shoulder with his left hand. And before the game, we saw him warming up with that left-handed little turnaround hook. And in this game, he had three or four. He got two fouls on Burns by going over his right shoulder with his left hand. And he made two or three of these hook shots with his left hand. And when that's happening and it's the scout is to get him to do that, it is deflating. You know what I mean? You're like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. We funneled him where we wanted to funnel him. And he's still finding success. And that's frustrating. And I feel like eventually it wears on you. And it definitely wore on NC State in this game. DJ Burns did a good job as best he can playing one-on-one. But he picked up his second foul with like 6:29 to play in the first half. Doesn't play the rest of the half. NC State was able to sort of hang around. Breon Pass was big.
They got a lift from those tertiary guys.
Right. Jaden Taylor. Yeah, right. Yeah. So there were guys that helped keep them in the game. But functionally speaking, as soon as Burns, Diarra, who really struggled on the boards, his rebounding has been the best part of his game. He was kind of Kaufman Wrenn took him out of the game a little bit, especially on the boards. And then slowly from there, it was just a slow burn to, okay, is this going to turn into a blowout? You know, it didn't get that far. I'm not going to say blowout is too far, but at a certain level, it just felt like Purdue was inevitable. And Edie is the reason for that. And as much as Edie's gotten a lot of gripe, we do want to give him his credit because he was dominant in this game.
Yeah, we were talking with my buddy Kyle Tucker, who writes for The Athletic before the game. And we were just talking about, he was saying that, like, you know, just give him credit for being big. And it's like, it's true, but like, that simple fact, like we like look around it at times, but then like you also have to think about, like, we've had 7'3", 7'4" guys in the college game, like Diakite for like Florida State. I'm trying to think of the other ones, but like being as skilled as he is, as big as he is.
I mean, Connor Hanover's at Wichita State or Missouri this
him,
year.
He can barely run. Right, I mean, like, you know, he does okay, but like they were terrible this year. But you're talking about like the inevitability, and I think if you were to point to one place that is the inevitability, it's the post touch. It's 30. I know I talked about it on our last episode. 30 in this game, 16 of them led to field goals or fouls. Four of those were three, so that's 1.167. That's just sort of the spine of what they do, and it's like really, really hard to get them to, you know, err from that because they do it in so many different ways. And just when you think you've defended it, you know, he gets one within the flow of their offense, like he does in those pick and rolls. I thought throughout this game, North Carolina State really couldn't have asked for a better script. We've been talking about the script of like how you're going to beat Purdue, and they were kind of, this was a guerrilla versus like a national superpower type warfare situation where NC State was going to have to get them, hit a lot of threes, turn them over. I really thought that they had a chance in the first half. Like, do you think, I felt like that first half, they couldn't complain at all about the way that went. Honestly.
Right. And they had a chance for it to be a one possession game. Lawyer hit that three, which you got a great shot of that to end the half. But I mean, to get it to a one possession, two possession game, that's all you could ask for. You know what I mean? Especially with Burns, he didn't play, but so much in that first half. And then unfortunately, you come into the second half, Burns picks up that third foul with 18:30 to play. Mm-hmm. Ben Middlebrooks gets his third foul, like right after the under 16 timeout. And now both guys have three fouls, and from there that's when it started to trickle down the other way. But I mean, they did their best to fight and hang around in this game. And if you're an NC State fan, you say to yourself, if we played and shot like we have been, we're totally in this game. I mean, they just could not buy a bucket. I mean, whether it was Horn, whether it was, you know, I mean, Taylor had some moments. He had one big three. But the fact that O'Connell didn't play as much, he was on the bike at one point and he only took one shot in this game. He's been like a nice crucial piece when like they just needed a three or they needed an open shot to be hit. He was that guy to initiate offense, and he just wasn't there tonight.
Yeah, it destabilized them a little bit, I think, like we were saying earlier. Like, just having him there is just kind of make sure that you underestimate. I know like old heads are probably just like, yeah, the power of the point guard. Like, you know, it's like the point guard isn't dead. Like the nature of that role is important for every offense. Like, just getting the ball where it needs to go constantly is important. And, you know, maybe Purdue went into this game knowing they could lure a Horn into playing that way. The other thing that we wanted to talk about was like, they needed to balance, and this is tricky for a team that has kind of been playing with house money and playing loose and playing aggressively. They needed to balance playing aggressively and loose with not screwing up. So it's like you wanted to really let it all hang out and be loose and take chances, but you also didn't want to do things that were like, you know, the
reckless.
Bad shot threshold is kind of a little gray. It's like, you know, and
they had a couple empty possessions back to back multiple times during this game where it was like, it felt like, okay, like there was one time it was 39-31, Burns had just hit a little turnaround. You're saying to yourself, okay, now they can get back to this game. That was a nice take on Edie. They get a stop, they come down, and then they immediately took a transition three. That was just like out of nowhere. And it was like, no, this is a time where we need to settle in, have a good possession, get a bucket, like put some pressure on Purdue. Every single time I was like in the danger zone of like, we can put pressure on Purdue. It just felt like a bad possession, a bad turnover. One time Taylor missed like a reverse layup, and that would have been a nice way
thinking,
to get,
though. You kept saying it during the game. You were like, yeah,
they're seeing Edie.
Seeing ghosts.
Edie. But then the next possession after the missed layup, he comes down and just completely the ball just bounces up awkwardly, and it's a turnover out of bounds. You know, and those two possessions, you're like, man, we could have really gotten something there. And then Casey Morsell in this game just was not who we've seen. I mean, I feel like I got to take a little bit of blame on this. If you watched Through the Ringer, we talked about guys to watch in this game, and we were adamant about Casey Morsell, especially defensively. But he airballed a three early in this game that kind of took the air out of the building a little bit in the first half. And then Lance Jones came on the other end and hit a big three. Yeah. And that was when you realize, okay, there's a lot of Purdue fans.
Now
they're loud.
We were sitting next to each other, and I had to like really hit you hard to get your attention. It was so loud in there. I mean, we had moments where, you know, Burns was moving the ball well for three. It like looked like it was good early. But I was going to talk about what the figuring out where that threshold of like what is too far, what's too aggressive, what's a little too much of a risk. And I felt like we agreed that like transition was a big one. Like they were able to get some opportunities to get out and run, maybe played their cards a little recklessly at times with like those digs on Edie, like just being a little too, like they got one really great dig on Edie where they turned it over and it was like that was a little physical, and you know the way the whistle gets called there, like if you, he's so big, it just,
and then the next possession they come back and dig again, and then it's like, okay, this
it's a foul, like you know,
we missed the last time,
you're pushing your luck, buddy. Pump the brakes. But the big thing was transition, where we were talking about one of the ways in watching them and like watching Edie get out of position is like if you have chances, and credit to Purdue for transition defense, finding guys, keeping them out of the lane, like they caught up and ID'd in transition. And NC State, a lot of times, like if I get ahead of Edie, I'm going to the rim in that situation. Right. I'm not going to settle.
Right. And we had a couple of times where we were talking about if you get Edie in that middle ground, free throw line to free throw line, when he's in that space, if you can get the ball ahead of him, then you have to go to the basket. But there was a couple of times NC State got ahead of him, kicked it out to threes that were contested instead of going to the basket. But that goes back to like, it was already inherently in their mind, even when I get ahead of Edie and I get to the basket, he's going to be behind me. And that goes to like Jaden Taylor is like looking behind him like, oh, where is he? I need to use the rim as protection. Yeah. Meanwhile, Edie's still at the free throw line. He hasn't gotten there yet, but it's somehow in your mind.
Fear is a powerful thing, man, in basketball. Like we've talked about, like that fear of like looking to see it eats up your CPU, and then you're not doing the things you would normally do comfortably. And that's the power of a shot blocker around the basket.
Yeah, we talked about, and we love talking about the unfortunately Nets game moment. For me, I had my unfortunately Nets game moment in this one with about 12:40 to play. Lance Jones hit a three to make it 45-33.
I have that written down as well.
And that's unfortunate. That's game. Lance Jones. I do think Lance Jones is, you know, glue guy, X factor, whatever like term you want to use. Like he is the swinger of this team, where it's like if Lance Jones is hitting threes and like hitting open threes, like they just go to this different level where you're almost like, who can beat Purdue? And there's probably only one team, and luckily they're going to be playing them on Monday night.
Which, you know, again, to reference those random, you know, anonymous Purdue fans, one of them said, I want UConn. I thought that was interesting. And he said, I want to kick their ass. We'll talk about whether or not that's possible. But Purdue, you know, led this whole game and they pulled away. And it kind of like the game flow, both of the game flows in this game were kind of mirrored each other. Like they kind of went the same way, which we kind of expected. There was a moment in the pregame where
the underdogs were holding on for dear life.
Yeah, they were gonna have to have something go very, very well. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that both of these teams are methodical about what they do, because they have these efficiencies, these high efficiencies in what they do, but they also have these bigs in the center. Did you want to, like, the bigs in terms of like year by year, we were just talking about like the best, I'm curious about like where this ranks and like the best big guy centric kind of Final Four ever. Like, I mean, and I would even throw Burns into this as like somebody.
I think
that,
so. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so just think of Grant Nelson, I guess, is sort of like a versatile kind of like,
it's kind of like a hybrid
a perimeter
five.
Big.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking back about it and I was like, you know, 15 had the Kaminsky Okafor, and like 12 was interesting with like AD, Withy, Thomas Robinson, Jared Solinger. Really, it's like, 08 Hansbrough, Joey Dorsey, Arthur and Aldridge, Darnell Jackson and Khan, and then Kevin Love. That was a really good one. And then 2007 with Ohio State, and then Florida's bigs, I think.
Right, Joakim Noah and Al Horford, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say those are kind of the pantheon. And then you go all the way back to like Ewing Olajuwon. I'm not saying that this is on that level, but in terms of like how big guys, like real anchoring big guys are impacting the Final Four, this is up there in terms of like total magnitude of impact.
When I close my eyes and I think of bigs impacting the Final Four or a national championship for that matter, I just see Luke Censher.
Luke Censher, Emeka Okafor. I didn't say that because that was so implied. So you skipped the thing that's super obvious. Yeah, I think about Luke Censher and I think about him battling.
I think of Sean May, James Augustine. You're right. That's a great point.
Those are one and two. We're talking about the rest of the list.
It is fascinating though, because like in basketball brain that we all have that we've kind of instilled, it's like it starts with the big and it starts with the point guard, right? But like first you get that big man, number one pick. But when you go back through the annals of college basketball, like there's really the few times that you can find where it's like, wow, this is a matchup. Like Joakim Noah, Greg Oden. Like I got my popcorn ready. I want to see these bigs go at it. But Olajuwon and Ewing is the one that is like the masterclass version of this. But it is interesting that we get Klingon and Edie, who, I mean, I think both guys are going to end up potentially being lottery guys. So like it is going to be a conversation, which is good for everybody.
Yeah. And we were kind of talking about, you know, what comparing them as players, and it's like, well, Edie, what you got to consider though is like Edie 2 years from now, what is he going to look like in terms of his offensive back? Because like you were saying, you know, Edie was kind of raw offensively as a sophomore because he picked the game up.
He looked rigid a couple years ago. Now he looks more fluid.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things too with that is like with guys who start late, if they have natural, you talked about him being a pitcher and he has like abnormal touch for his size. It's like if you're starting late, you're not tearing down a big like developmental sort of like setback can be just tearing down bad habits. And for a guy like him who has that size, you know, but like you were saying with like the point guard thing, all right, with the point guard to center thing, like big guys, and then it trickles down from there. I still think that the game has changed enough. I think that it's just when you get outliers like Klingon and Edie,
they're special.
The nature resets itself. Right. It's just like, you know,
and it's the big guy wins. Tall guy is going to win a title. It turns out that that's as simple as that sometimes. A couple more notes on this game. I just wanted to point out some cameos. We got Kelvin Sampson was announced as coach of the year. And
not the coach of the year thing. You know,
Josh Shirtz had a great year as coach of the year, last undefeated team, number one seed, all that sort of stuff. But he gets announced. They do D3 first, D2, then they get to Sampson. And the Purdue crowd, I mean, just boosts him out of the building.
Which
the state fans also realize, like, hey, we don't like this guy either. They start booing him. Yeah. And Kelvin Sampson's just kind of laughing. He gives a thumbs up and a wink to the
camera. Gave a wink and it was baller, honestly.
It was great. It was a great reaction. He was like, I love that they hate me. Yeah.
That means power. Yeah. That's respect. Yeah. I just thought, well, I was thinking Purdue fans should have thought through that a little bit, though, because they should have cheered Sampson really hard because he just further messed up Indiana basketball. I mean,
it was an interesting moment where you're like, they haven't gotten the context of the situation. They're just like, he affiliated with Indiana at any time, aka I hate this man. Right. And it was a great college basketball moment. Great reaction from Sampson. That was good to see. Drew Brees in the building supporting Purdue. I thought that was healthy and trim. Looking good. Yeah. Man. Shout out to Drew Brees. Yeah, so that was cool to see. And then Roy Williams was in the building talking to Mark Few, Jim Boeheim. And a lot of people think Roy Williams was the hitman of this situation. He does hate NC State. He says that he can't eat when NC State wins. So he came out to Phoenix to make sure that NC State did not win.
Yeah, everybody was like, Roy, you're looking trim. You're looking good. He's like, NC State's winning. That's the diet. What's your diet? Oh, yeah, Kevin Keats' success is my diet right now. Yeah.
Shout out to NC State. Great run to the Final Four. Shout out to Purdue. They're going to be playing on Monday night. Say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tournament. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sportsbook. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. If you go to FanDuel Sportsbook right now, they got title game bets there. Take UConn. I think you should do it. There's $200 to use on point spreads, money lines. You can even pick who's going to win it all. And the wait is over. North Carolina, FanDuel is officially live in the Tar Heel State. Just visit FanDuel.com/OSP and bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit TheRinger.com/RG. First online real money wager. Only $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Let's talk about the second game, Alabama-UConn. It was fascinating. So like the way that they have this set up, they have students that are just waiting outside in line, and then the game changes over. They clean up the student area. Now it goes from before it was Purdue fans. Now Alabama fans are coming in. So they're giving the pizza to all the kids. The Alabama faithful, it looks like they're buying into the basketball program. I just want to say this. There was a lot of Alabama represented. I did not necessarily expect that. So I wanted to give a tip of the cap, just like we did to NC State. You know, give the losers some love before we get into the actual game. But the Alabama fans, they came out. They showed support. We saw a Colin Sexton jersey. It looked like a fan base that was trying to accept basketball.
The rules are out the window with the jerseys. Yeah. Like I used to be like an official, authentic guy. Right. And I was just looking around. I was like, that's not real. Where did they get what?
Yeah. AliExpress or what, Alibaba, whatever it is, like that Chinese website that everyone's getting these jerseys. Shout out to them because they're cashing checks amongst these
text
college
was
kids.
Way too big. Yeah, we saw that. Shout to the NCAA for the efficiency, like you said, for that. They had a line of pizza like set up for the students, and since beer is allowed now, had some pretty comical moments that I wish I'd had.
A lot.
So you get the scramble of the Bama students. I don't know if you saw this, Kyle. Like there was one dude who looked like me in college. He had like hair back here, but he was like running, and he had all this crap draped around his arms. And he had two full beers, and he's trying to run and get. He spilled half his beer.
There's a lot of that. And it's funny because the students, like the media seats that we had, like they're coming around the media too, which is like these big J's. There's one thing the big J's don't like. That's
riff
students.
Raff. That's riff.
They don't like students.
Two big R's.
And
riff,
you're putting them all around, and they're roll tied. I mean, they got shirts on that say roll F and tie. It's all types.
Davis down here, you know,
Alabama guy, media royalty.
We can't be intermingling. It was tough. I will say, like, not as much like the intensity of the Bama student section up at the front, pretty high, but as it came back, it got pretty lax. I mean, there were groups of people just kind of sitting down even during the serious parts of the game.
Well, I wanted to give them credit because there's a lot of people calling them out because with about a minute 30 to go, they were out of there.
It's an ouch.
Which is not a good look. You got to kind of, sometimes in the world of basketball, it's a little bit different than football. I think you're supposed to leave early. You're supposed to be like, I'm over this. Like, come on, Saban! Yeah. Saban! And then you get out of there. But for whatever reason tonight, the Alabama fans were getting some grief from the people. So shout out to them. They showed up. They played well. Let's get to the basketball because it started out from the start like something that you needed to see. Klingon versus Grant Nelson. First possession, Klingon gets a block on Grant Nelson. You and I immediately are elbowing each other like, this is the game within the game right here. Nelson versus Klingon. Can he bring him out the three-point line? He gets blocked, goes out of bounds. They are a baseline play. They draw it up. Grant Nelson hits a three. And immediately you say, I think Alabama might have a chance in this game, you know, and it did trend that direction for quite some time. Alabama held on to the reins for as long as they could before it really separated. But let's start there. Grant Nelson versus Donovan Clingan.
Well, yeah, they were trying to work to get that match because I think it was Stevenson or Pringle was guarding Clingan initially. Yep. Clingan just looked a little Alabama did a pretty good job bringing the help opportunistically. They were doing it when he turned his head, when he take a dribble, they'd bring it really quick and retreated really well, I thought, early on. Nelson just really from three just couldn't quite get it going tonight. 1-for-4 from three. He had 19 points and he was 7-for-16 overall, 15 rebounds, but he didn't really, the ball didn't move through him. He picked up a couple early fouls like he's been doing lately. We'll talk about a highlight that he had, but early on in the game, the thing that I noticed was, the Castle Sears dynamic, I think, was the thing that was pretty noticeable from the jump. I thought Castle was on blanketing him everywhere. A little bit of holding here. It was a little bit of Rubin's race and physical play off the ball. I don't know. It seemed like I wonder what NBA people are going to take away from that game in terms of Sears, because I don't know if he'll be guarded like that all the time in the NBA because he won't be the primary option. I don't expect that to happen.
Right.
But even on the other end, Castle was and we can talk more about Castle too. Castle was posting him up in the early clock. They brought some physicality problems for Bama to address early on and immediately, I thought.
It was a game of runs, as we always know in the game of college basketball, but it was also a game of matchups. And I think one of the fascinating matchups was what you just said. It was Mark Sears with Castle guarding him. But then on the other end, Nate Oates did exactly what he did to North Carolina with Elliott Cadeau and Seth Trimble and these guys. He has Grant Nelson guarding Stephon Castle, and he basically says, "You beat us from outside. You get that open three, and guess what, Castle? You take that all night as long as you want." He misses the first one. He makes the next two. And then from there, he played a pretty disciplined game because it was a conscious choice to say, "You beat us from the outside." And he showed the restraint to say, "Okay, I know that they're giving me the shot. Now I'm going to go down to the post. Now I'm going to drive. Now I'm going to try to get to the basket.
Cut mine the basket when clinging catches." Yeah,
right, right. He was moving off the ball more because he realized, oh, they want me to shoot this. And that was, it was great. There was a chess match going on between Oates and Hurley. And I thought that was one of them early where, Oates is we like that he wants that shot.
Yeah.
Let's see his NBA range. let's let him show it tonight.
Yeah, he took six of them and shot, I think, I don't have his for the year average, but I think it's not far off from that. I think he's low 30s. Isn't he 32 or something
I think
that?
So,
and I think probably what Nate Oates was thinking, I'm just going to assume I know exactly what Nate Oates is thinking because I'm just on that level, right? who is?
No, great guy.
No, he... I would assume if it were me that I can't say that if it were me, I would just think okay, are we going to be able to do the horn thing here and similar thing? Even if Castle does have a good night, even if he gets to the 20 point range and let's say he does it at 40% efficiency, there are so many crazy great efficiencies within what UConn does, in terms of obviously the shooters that they have, obviously the rim pressure they have with Clingan. I would rather bait them to do that. I don't think it was a bad bet to try to get him to do that, but luckily he didn't, he's a smart player. He didn't take the bait. So overall, it was just felt, I had this pulled up. UConn, actually Alabama, the biggest lead they ever got. Yeah. 23-18 at 11-12. And then it was tied again at 12-12. But for the rest of it, as competitive as the game as it was, Alabama only led, for a very short amount of it.
Yeah, and Mark Sears ended up with a pretty solid game. 24 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. It kind of, passes the snuff test. But Aaron Estrada was the one that kind of felt like he was keeping them in the game, especially from the outside. I think he ended up, with 4 threes in this game? He ended up with 13 points, 4 threes. Did miss a couple free throws as well. But, he did the best that he could to kind of just keep the life into Alabama. Estrada is a transfer, just like Mark Sears came from Hofstra. So these are two, mid-major guys, get to high major levels. Talked about wanting to get to Final Four playing on this big stage. He delivered the best he could. Grant Nelson, 19-15. Ryland Griffin was the one I think they needed a little bit more from in this game.
Yeah.
And not to put too much on him. He's had a great run throughout this tournament, but they were hoping to get more explosive, efforts from him, especially shooting the basketball. But Grant Nelson, 19-15 in this game. Alabama, they did all they could, but it just felt like they didn't have enough in the chamber to really make a run with UConn, which honestly gives more credit to the waves. And we talked about stacking all these sets. Eventually, like, it wears on you and the mental lapses come. And when they come quickly. And, and the snowball effect happens very, very fast.
Yeah, they spread you thin and then they just poke a little hole and like an ocean just flows in through it. That's just kind of, even if you hold up, they're going to spread you super, super, super thin. And you got to score. I mean, like, there were times there where they just couldn't string together, you know, bobbling the ball around the basket. Some of that is clinging. A lot of that just, I thought, and the thing that really starts to kill you, though, is like we were talking about, this UConn-Purdue matchup is just going to be really interesting because both of these teams do a really good job not beating themselves. And, you know, that's typical of like teams that reach this level to begin with. But like, which team is going to be able to do that better? I don't know if you want, we don't have to do a full preview of this like in this moment, but like, it snowballed on them. You know, suddenly you make a couple of bad decisions. Caravan pops for a three. Tristan Newton pops for a three. You know, Klingon starts getting, and then if you notice, Caravan got that three. Mm-hmm. Next couple plays, Klingon gets dunked. So it's just kind of like you choose to take away one and they kill you with the other.
And it's funny because there's so much symmetry. I think, you know, in case you missed it, UConn runs away with this game. They win another game in the NCAA tournament by double digits. Dan Hurley, after the game, like he has throughout this entire time, basically says job's not finished. We're not even going to celebrate this win. I mean, this is literally who Connecticut is, and that's who they have been. So now we get to a point where, and I think we talked about this last year, it's like we want someone that just is a quality-worthy adversary for them, right? And it's funny because both these teams, in a sense, have become the villains of college basketball. Zach Edey himself now has, you know, if you're not a Purdue fan, for whatever reason, it does feel like the discourse is like, we don't like Zach Edey. Dan Hurley, same type of deal. He's a little obnoxious. He's a little bit of a maniac. Cam Spencer is doing the Tiger Woods fist bump to the crowd saying, you know, get up in the air to the UConn fans. Yeah. Like, they have this villain kind of arc happening in real time. And now you have a clash of two teams that are villains because they're dominant. So you have two dominant teams with dominant bigs with very similar playing styles that they have the others who can kill you from the three-point line. It's a pick-your-poison matchup. And both teams, the matchups are going to be incredible.
Yeah, one thing that I'm curious to see is, you know, Purdue being able to contain UConn's like ball penetration, basically, mm-hmm. because I think something interesting to watch in this upcoming game is going to be, Edey is not a vertical threat in terms of like throwing over the top in the same way that Klingon is. Mm-hmm. And if Purdue can't contain, I mean, these will probably be the most athletic guards that Purdue has played this season. Can you think of another team that, I mean, well, UConn is kind of, I mean, they're just incomparable in a lot of ways, but like,
I just think the size, and we've talked about this before, the size of UConn in general is going to be imposing, you know, especially in the backcourt. Tristan Newton is a perennial mismatch. I mean, he's a 6'6" point guard. I mean, that who sees that? And he's not only that, it's like he'll guard your wing. You know what I mean?
He'll guard your two-way three. Player.
Yeah. He can guard 1, 2, 3, possibly 4. Like, that's a different animal in and of itself.
Yeah, Edey's like foot speed recovering to the rim, and Klingon is able to go up to a level that like no other big that he's played can, you know, he can go to a level that no other big that Edey has played can go to. And I think that's going to be an interesting push and pull for Purdue to defend. And then you start just kind of thinking about help is going to be a big thing too in this game. So I don't know that Purdue's going to have their work cut out for them. Will Klingon be able to, because, well, one thing we said about the Bama thing, like the distance between the non-Klingon bigs in that game, we were like, it's not that big. And in this matchup, you know, they have Johnson behind Klingon. So
Samson,
that's gonna
Johnson.
Be, yeah, that's going to be a big thing too in this game. So I don't know. It's that dynamic, I think, is going to be interesting.
Let's just like set the stage for this game, and then we can talk a little bit about just like the big picture, like the impetus of like, how do we get to the next stage of college basketball, right? Because I mentioned the narrative going into this. It's like college basketball, there's no stars, there's no intrigue, there's no this, there's no that. There is a coach on one side, Dan Hurley, who's a star. Dan Hurley is a star. Yeah. He grabs your attention. He wears dragon underwear. He's washing his suits. He wants his wife to be on TV more. He's also a basketball sicko in the best sense. I say that with love. You know what I mean? Like, I like that. Like, Tom Thibodeau is one of my favorite people. He's like, I told my fiance we're getting divorced, basically, pre-divorced, because I'm married to the game of basketball. These are crazy people that you're dealing
Hurley,
with.
Hurley seems like the type of guy who would, like, get mad at you because you're not talking about his wife, but he also would get mad at you if you're
talking about his wife.
So he just,
he's
really going to
be mad regardless, and you decide how he gets
there. Did you see the play at the end of the game where I think Diarra got hit in the face with an elbow or something?
Oh,
and
yeah,
the camera
right.
caught Hurley go, he got hit in the fucking face. Yes. Like, he like, he just like reared back like he was like possessed. Like, yeah.
He's a character. He's a star. And he deals with the officials like no person, like old Big East. This is the old Big East coach. So like star-wise, you got him. Matt Painter is like the consummate, like good for the game coach, right? Like when Congress needs someone to go represent the men's college basketball, it's like, let's send Matt Painter because he has a great moral compass. He does the right things and like he runs a great program.
He's got that warm face. It's kind of a cherubic sort of a like that guy, you know, that guy would give me a ride home or something if I...
Yeah,
if I accidentally took acid and ended up at a party and didn't know where I was, that guy would give me a ride.
Matt Painter's
home,
like, give me your keys and I'm going to take you home tonight. Yeah. I hope you, I hope that your family's okay. You know? It's like, thank you, Matt Painter. But these guys are stars, but they're also like different in their own. They do things similarly, but very different, which is great. And then as far as we talked about Elijah, I'm talking about Ewing. It's like you get a 7'4" giant. This guy's a true giant. Like he is a mythical figure. Paul Bunyan, whatever you want to call him.
He's a Game of Thrones extra, basically.
Right.
Yeah,
he will be the mountain in the future or something along those lines.
We got some more House of the Dragon seasons coming up. Shout out to
my guy, Neil Fingleton. Rest in peace.
McDonald's All-American.
Shout out to him. But he was the first one to do this. So we have a star in Zach Edey that, like, if you're just a casual fan, you say, who's that big dude right there, right? And then you get Donovan Klingon, who's also a 7-foot-footer, who's also now taking on the personality of Dan Hurley. He's kind of like his Frankenstein. So, like, you have these two players, bigs, that are going to be guarding each other, playing against each other with the exact same roles, responsibilities, rim pressure, defense around the rim. Like, they're so, like, kindred spirits in that way, the way that they're going to play. Then you have these coaches who are going to figure out a way to mastermind the game to benefit them the best. It is a all-time matchup. That's what I'm trying to say.
I know we, you know, is FanDuel the one I should mention? Okay, I just want to make sure.
they're listening.
Yeah. All right. I think this should be a FanDuel thing. How will Klingon block an Edey baby hook in this game? And if so, does he block more? First, do you think he'll do it?
Yes. Yes, minus 140.
Okay.
I think he does block it. Yeah. I think he does. And I think, honestly, there's going to be a moment in this game, and I hope there is this moment in this game, where Edey looks over at Matt Painter like, oh... you know what I mean? Like that, just like quick, like, oh dang, like I'm really gonna have to do this.
Like, yeah,
this
it's like it tastes blood. I don't know. Yeah, he just like he looks and he sees blood for the first time, and that's
right.
That's
he's like, I can bleed.
Yeah,
right. It's like Pirates of the Caribbean when they realize they're humans again. You know what I mean? It's like, oh man, like I can die. Like I'm not having as much fun fighting these guys.
The stakes are different now.
That's what we need, and to have like, and it's not like this is gonna be some archaic dinosaur game where you know the you can build up this idea where it's like a bunch of guys like posting up. Like,
these are modern offenses built around dominant big guys, which should make you happy, old guys. This is a handshake Final Four between the new and the old generation, isn't it?
I agree. I think we're moving in the direction now where it's like, this is good. Like, both sides, there's so much like generational warfare, like within the conversations about basketball, where it's like, no, back in my day, it was better. You know what I mean? You don't get it, young man, young whippersnapper. Let me tell you about this game. Now I feel like if you can watch these guys, you can see this is the basketball that you know and love. So if you're an old guy or a young guy, this is the first time that you can see a big and you're like, I get it. See another big, I get it. See actual offense being ran and be like, oh, this is pretty. And we can all come together, shake hands and say, you know what? We love this game. Like, can't college basketball bring us together? That's the question. And here's the answer. Yes. And it starts on Monday night.
Well, we're divided, you know, right now, I think.
We're divided because we're getting conquered.
We got the gender warfare going on.
I don't like it. Just because I watch Caitlin Clark play on a Friday does not mean that I can't enjoy Zach Edey playing on a Saturday. I still don't understand what's happening. I do think it's coming from the top. I don't want to point fingers at anybody, but I think someone at the top whoever it may be, is saying, make them fight so they don't worry about us. And it might rhyme. Never mind. I'm not going to say it. I won't say it.
Well, yeah, that matchup's going to be good. We'll see how many, if he can get to Edie. I think Edie, like when he gets momentum, is a little faster maybe than people give him credit for, which I guess isn't like the hottest, sharpest take ever. But like, I feel like Kling and running in the open floor could be an issue for Kling, for Edie in this.
You think
game.
You can beat him down the floor?
Probably. I don't know. That's something to watch. Just I'm kind of wondering where they're going to pick and choose like the vulnerabilities, differences between the two guys, or if they just kind of play each other to sort of a
stalemate.
Yeah, I mean, because Edie is a little bit more of like aggressive and kind of going to his spots and trying to score. Then Klingon seems like he's like he could score. He's just not really super worried about.
Are we worried about the hand being wrapped? I thought there were moments in this game where he didn't want to take a shot.
I didn't realize that the hand was even a thing. Did that happen during this game?
Or no, he came into the game with the hand wrapped.
He broke that like earlier in the year. Yeah, had an issue with it.
I think like there's some gamesmanship to that, by the way, because I think Dan Hurley likes to be like he's not even 100%. You know what I mean? Like I think Dan Hurley is like able to play that game where he's like, imagine what he would be like if he was 100%.
Yeah.
And then it sounds better.
You better get us now while his hand is wrapped.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. Like if they lose this game, Dan Hurley is going to come there and he's going to have a cast on his hand like LeBron did in the finals and be like, this is why we lost.
I think we need to give credit too that like, in the trenches when it came to Alabama is like just a terrible defensive rebounding team. And like, Cam Spencer just ran in there and just poked that weakness with like a machete over and over again in that game. Yes. Like he just like he was and he's been doing that.
He was
like
Arya
a lot.
Stark,
he's carved out like a nice little like area of production for himself on that. But like repeatedly they were just backbreaker because Alabama can't defend for a normal clock anyway. And when you get in there and you just like.
There's
trying
a lot of pressure
to,
on Grant
you're
Nelson
trying
to
stop
clean up possessions,
these
right?
Stacked actions and shit. And it's like when Spencer gets an offensive rebound, it's a soul crusher. And it was just too much for Bama to overcome at the end of the day.
Last thing, we'll make some predictions here, or at least give our take about like what we think is going to happen in this game. And, you know, general thoughts, like I said, this is going to be a great national championship game. I'm not saying it's going to be Elijah Wan versus Patrick Ewing.
Oh, you won't say that.
I won't say that, but it might be second best with a long gap in between. Might be second best with a long gap in between. And look, this is me trying to sell the game because I'm over this. I'm over, like, we need people to market this game. This is Edie versus Kling Kong. This is what we wanted. This is Godzilla versus King Kong. It's in theaters right now.
There needs to be some kind of NIL tie-in, right?
The you new put empire. Their heads superimposed on Godzilla and King Kong. Have them battle it out. And then tell me that college basketball is dead.
Dude, I just realized Klingon has his hand wrapped in the trailer for the King Kong movie. He has a fake hand. He's impaired.
Right.
I didn't realize that.
I think it is happening in real time.
Let's do the time.
Do we think UConn is inevitable? I think that's the question. Is Edie and Purdue the perfect foil to them? Or is it just like we've seen this steamroll coming a mile away and now it's happening in real time?
I feel like UConn's like athleticism and size at the point of attack is going to be an issue for them. Like I do. I do mm-hmm. think it's going to get Bama on their Purdue on their heels. And I do think that like clinging over the top, like I said, I think is going to be an issue for them. I would probably give UConn like a 6-10. Like I feel like it'll probably like it.
The line's 5.5, so Vegas is on you.
There we go. I'll go 8. I think UConn will just it'll be a very close game. I just think that they'll just kind of wear them down and get it into that. We'll say 8, but it'll be like a 4-ish point back and forth game, I think, throughout.
Dan Hurley has said famously that he doesn't like playing in close games because he can't win close games. He's a maniac. But if Purdue can make him play a close game and they have to execute down the stretch, is there any sort of breaking point where we say, oh, maybe they should have played in some close games?
Just a macro Mike mindfuck that he's doing where he's like, we can't play in close games. And he's just right. motivating.
He's like, we have to win by 20 or we will lose.
He's like, my team can't do it. It's a Patino. It is.
No lateral quickness.
And they're going to execute and that's going to be the story from somebody in the athletic or whatever it is. You know, I just think he's nagging them on purpose. But I think UConn's going to win. What's your pick?
I agree. I think UConn is inevitable. I think UConn is going to repeat. And then when they do repeat, like, where is the next conversation with Dan Hurley and UConn? You know what I mean? They, like, where do they sit? Because if you have a table of the blue bloods, the true bloods, the blue bloods, the new bloods, everybody sits down at a table. UCLA, you're grandfathered in with your 11. You know, you're the Bill Russell of college basketball. Congratulations. Number eight. Striving for nine, though. Kentucky.
We're striving.
You guys are striving for nine. So you guys have been striving for so many years. Striving for nine. You guys are at the table. You're probably saying, like, we're kind of wink, wink, number one. Then you got North Carolina sitting there with six. Some say seven if you count 1924. I'll say six. UConn now would be six. They'd be sitting equal footing with North Carolina starting in 1999. Like, how, like at the table, how much of a pie do they get? I mean, it just feels like, I'm worried. Like, there's an existential crisis on the Blue Bloods right now.
I think there's an imbalance just because of the power of the brand of Duke. This is what we were talking about at the game.
Indiana's at five.
The right only reason him. Duke has that kind of brand power is because of the 90s Krzyzewski thing that he kept going. If they had switched coaches and kept it going.
Cheating, yeah.
Which UConn should get more credit. That's the thing that's kind of not right about this. They should get more credit because they've done it with multiple coaches. They're a legit blue blood. Like, it's a ridiculous conversation anymore. And, like, is Duke getting too much credit now? Because I feel like that's
now that is the conversation that I think it should lead to. The table just went up for some reason.
Yeah, Tate, flip this table, get a glass of water. Tate. No, I just think that, you know, because I was making that argument about just, like, brand wise, is UConn going to become the inevitable empire that everybody bands together? A, at that game, you notice the just, like, discomfort and murmurs of people just being like, oh, fucking UConn. You can just feel it in the building.
The crowd booed them.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody else other than the UConn fans.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend thing going on. But I think, like, if you think about it, like, maybe it's deceptive and, like, they, because we act like they're just, like, they've snuck into this conversation. And I don't know if that's a representation of reality.
And I think Jim Calhoun, like, Dick Vitale might have to write a new book with his Mount Rushmore. I think the longer the time kind of, like, you know, UConn continues to sit at that table, I think Jim Calhoun is going to get more and more credit. So,
yeah, that's a good
point. John Rothstein will be happy about that. He told me once upon a time that Jim Calhoun was the greatest coach ever. No questions asked. And I laughed in his face. But who's laughing now? The UConn Huskies. We got a great game Monday night, national championship game. We're going to be in the building. Appreciate everybody tuning into One Shining Podcast. We will be back Monday night reacting to the national championship game. It's going to be a great one. It is two giants going up against each other. What else could you ask for? Hope everybody enjoys. And we will see you again on Monday night. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.